Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. This is Lisa Anderson. I hope you had a great Easter weekend. Ready for this week's show. Later on for our inbox, we have a guy who is kind of in a friendlationship or is worried that he's in one, and so he needs some advice. And so who else but Joshua Rogers to come and give him some insight and hopefully some encouragement. And then for our culture segment, I was not here for that, but Catherine interviewed our good friend Deborah Falada on the idea of codependency and interdependence. And what does that have to do with independence? Which one is good? Which one isn't? What does it all look like? How do you put it together? So we're going to hear that. And here we are for our roundtable, though. Very exciting because we've got Tiffany, Michael, and Rob here to talk about summer travel, specifically traveling as a single adult. And we know what that's like. So welcome, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so travel. Are we all fans of travel here? I'm assuming, Tiffany, you're like a bona fide like missionary traveler, so
yeah,
you better
yeah.
like it.
Yeah, I like it more before, but I like it just fine now. No, it's actually wonderful.
Okay, cool. And obviously, we have experiences traveling, whether for work, for vacation, missions yeah. trips and stuff, so
right,
we've all
right.
kind of...
Yep.
done it. And I do want to clarify that, like, just because you're traveling like as a single adult doesn't mean that you only travel alone, because
right.
a
right.
lot of yeah, right. a lot of times, and actually we're going to talk about this too, because we get questions from people that are like, okay, like, you know, families, you kind of have your built-in like family posse to go travel with, but when you're single, you have to you actually select people that you travel with, and sometimes that's harder than just having the same old of people that you know. Now, Rob, you have kids, so you travel with them occasionally.
I've traveled with them, yeah, but I've also traveled
but you hate it.
By myself before.
Oh.
Well, travel is glamorous. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
I'm by glamorous, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, let's talk, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges that you have encountered in traveling? And is there anything specifically that you know that you've done or learned to do to kind of overcome them?
Hold your plans loosely.
Okay. And give an example, Rob, because I know, I mean, you've done international travel.
Yeah.
You've done a bunch.
Well, when I was traveling, I spent a month in Europe
okay.
After mm-hmm. college. And it was a great plan. But boy, oh boy, did I discover things along the way that I didn't know was the case. Like at that time, you needed a visa to enter France.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I didn't know that until after I started my trip. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when I was in Vienna trying to get into the French embassy, they were closed.
Of course.
So it just didn't really accommodate my plan. But
well, I'm hung yeah. up on the fact that you traveled in Europe after you graduated, because I basically applied for jobs that I didn't get. That was my summer after college.
Sucker. Familiar.
Well, it was after
this is
a
like
mission
the quintessential.
Trip. It was oh. after a 3-month mission trip in West
okay.
Africa. And this is one of the
word.
Things that I think people should consider
yeah.
is that... a mission trip can have things added onto it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I broke up the return from Africa. That's where that month traveling in Europe was taken. That's how it got done.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, let's kind of expand upon that a little bit, the whole idea of holding plans loosely, because mm-hmm. obviously when you're in a different culture or whatever, you're going to come across things that you're not prepared for. In fact, I was in Venezuela, lost my passport. That was my fault. So I had to go about recovering a sense of, you know, citizenship from the U.S. and all that. So that was tricky. But what are some other things you guys have encountered?
I mean, I think for me, one of the biggest things is obviously as you get older, you know, some of your friends start to have families and, you know, it's harder to make plans. And so I find myself, you know, when I've got free time saying, I want to go travel to this place or that place. I'm thinking, who wants to go with me? And, mm-hmm. and everybody doesn't have the time.
Yeah.
So
back to your point about, you know, making sure to hold your plans loosely, just being really flexible.
Well, and the other thing is something that I've noticed, too, is not everyone is on the same budget. So it's
yeah,
like
that's
some people are like, I will road trip with you 3 hours away. And some people are like, let's drop everything and go for 4 weeks to like, you know.
yeah.
the Maldives or something, and you're like, okay, maybe I can't quite do that one either. So yeah, it's hard to find people that have the time off and the
I find myself reminding myself not to be a jerk, because I remember, like, I don't have to support a family and that sort of thing, and my friends, why don't you want to go on that 4-week trip with me to the Maldives? Well, we've got a family to support.
Yeah. No, and not only that, this is even more offensive. Like, I just had this conversation with my own sisters. Like, they don't even want to travel with me because they cannot vacation without their husbands. And I'm like, can you not do maybe one vacation every 5 years with your own sister? And it was just kind of like, thanks for asking, but we like to just travel with. So you have to be, there are expectations. Yeah. You know, I just think everyone's going to drop everything and you're so fun and let's just do this. And then they have planned their whole lives with other people.
Well, expectations though. I mean, there's expectations that say, sure, we'll travel and staying in youth hostels is fine.
Yeah, some people love that.
And then others will say, Michelin star only.
Yeah.
That's a budget difference.
We had that on a large group one time. We had 90 people that we had in Scotland, and we were in this camp, and some of them like, this is amazing. We're together and we're bunking. And some of them that were older are like, where's our room service? And we're like, we left that back in the States, you know? And so, there's just extreme variance in all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about the challenge of just time? Because I know a lot of young adults, especially, they would love to, I mean, there are a lot of folks that would love to do like short-term missions. Mm-hmm. Or they would love to do, but then you have kind of the obligatory going home for Christmas family trips or the parents that are like, we haven't seen you in 8 days. We need you to take another vacation and come over here. No, usually it's more like a year, but sometimes my parents were like, hey, where are you? But anyway, how can that be negotiated? Because you have limited time off. You want to do something that is, you know, substantial, like maybe you want to do a missions trip, you want to go with your church somewhere, you want to do a project, whether in the States or elsewhere, but balancing that time, how do you prioritize?
It's something I did along those lines, because when I went overseas, my parents were living in a different state at the time, and so I was dealing with all of that. I just arranged my travel, so I went through Dallas, and so I had a day to spend with them before we left to head out to wherever we were going.
Yeah.
So just working that in. Yeah. So it wasn't like your typical spending a whole week with your parents or home or something like that, but just having that touch point.
I think there's also a lot of options too. Like sometimes we think, oh, my church is doing that mission trip, and if I don't do that one, I can't do anything.
Right.
But you know, there's a lot of different agencies and church groups and all that kind of stuff, and they have varied trips throughout the summer, throughout, you know, spring breaks are at different times for different universities. And so, yeah, just looking, like expanding your options and seeing what else might be out there.
Yeah, I mean, we have a pretty good vacation policy here at Focus, but what I've tried to do in jobs past and even here is if, you know, you take advantage of time that you're going to get off anyway, Memorial Day, Labor Day, those kind of things, you know, take those times to go on longer trips so you're not burning a vacation day. Mm-hmm. And then the same can be true for work trips. There's been work trips that I've been on if I'm someplace nice where I'll say, well, you know, I'm supposed to fly back this Friday, but maybe I'll take the next couple of days to stay, you know, and go down to San Diego for the weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. I have a friend whose mom is like super, and I mean, you know, she's like, my friend's like in her 30s, so, but her mom's super still overprotective and is always freaking out whenever she goes somewhere, like flying, like following her flight paths and like, you know, praying. And if she goes internationally, her mom just basically has to check herself in somewhere. She can't even deal with it. So it's like how I know, Tiffany, I think you have a story of just when people in your life don't agree with your plans, or especially if you're choosing to uproot and maybe do something cross-culturally or whatever, how have you negotiated those situations?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. The hard thing is you kind of just have to do it. And that's the hardest thing, is because you love your family. You know, we ended up, well, first of all, we felt called to go to Tennessee from Florida. You know, why would you ever do that? They have people in Tennessee. They have a lot of people there, you know, like, yes, they do. That is the, you know, Nashville, the Mecca right there. And so we just had to let them know that we love them, and we'll call them and we'll let them know. But our family is called to serve God there. And really, it was in preparation. Like, we didn't realize it, but it was in preparation to then. We're in Dallas for 18 months and now here in Colorado. And now we're, you know, back and forth to Europe all the time. And our family, God was really gracious in the sense that he let us gradually get our families used to it. You know, he didn't just throw them all in the deep end, but it was really hard for them. And it was really hard for us too. And now that my kids are older, And I'm more traveling alone because my husband stays here a lot. It's really hard, you know, but we've just, you know, with our kids had to come to an agreement. Okay. Like for this, you know, spring, we've got a huge new project that I've started and it's the first launch and, but my daughter's graduating, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, there are some things you're like, no, I can't go. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sacrifice for that. And then other things, hey, y'all, I love you, but this is what God's called me to do. And it's more of an internal thing. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny because I think one of the luxuries of being single is that we can often have our alone time or our me time or whatever. And, you know, it used to be whether you're traveling or not, you know, I used to be like, oh, okay, so I'm done with you people and I'm just going to go home and like be by myself,
yeah.
Which is awesome. But when you're traveling, you sometimes are put into a crucible of now you might have a gaggle of different characters or you're traveling with coworkers that you're like, I don't even like you in the office. Now I'm with you. You know, whatever.
24/7 with you.
So let's talk about just some relational strategies for that. First of all, how can you choose well, like in vacationing on the front end, to do this well so no one's going to have a bunch of drama and stuff? And then if you just happen to be traveling with people that maybe you don't know or are more difficult to get along with, what are good ways to navigate that?
Yeah, for me, it was really interesting. Actually, just in January, I ended up having 2 weeks of travel that I knew I was going to be bouncing to a couple of different countries with two people that I had never even met. And so I was like, how do we prepare for this? You know, how? Because I am an introvert. Like, I need my downtime. And typically when you're working and traveling, it's, you know, 12-hour days with people all the time. And so I just brought my earbuds. And I was like, and I had to be honest with them. I was like, y'all, I love you. Well, I think, and I'm learning to meet you and everything, but I need some downtime or I'd go to bed early or I would just like totally check out when we were traveling. So you do the, you know, obligatory, hey, let's get to know each other. But then I'm like, okay, we've been on a train for 5 hours. Now we're getting on a plane for 6 hours. This is my time. This is, you know, just being intentional about those little bits that you do get, I think.
Yeah, that's good.
Sure. And I think, you know, for me, I have to remember sometimes I'll travel with people from work or travel with friends who don't travel as much as I do. And I think the key thing is patience because I've got, you know, TSA pre-check or global entry or, you know, all that stuff. And so I'll be gone through pre-check and I'll be there looking at my watch. It's 15 minutes. They're still in the, you know, the regular line. I'm like, come on, let's go. Or we've got one of the guys.
They're still searching for their liquid.
Right. Yeah. Still taking their shoes off. So we have one of the guys we travel here with from work. We were in New York recently and he'd really never been to New York. And in Times Square, they pass out, you know, all kinds of material. And, you know, the idea is avoid eye contact. You're not taking anything from him. And he said, oh, thank you. He's grabbing CDs.
Oh,
I said, what are you doing? I had to give the guy 10 bucks because, of course, once you take it,
right.
You know, you bought it. So.
You're stuck with it. That's funny. I found that, especially for vacationing, one of my practical takeaways is you have to decide on the front end if you're going to just travel with like a travel buddy, like someone you know you get along with and that you have similar interests and you're otherwise, if you expand the group, you have to make sure that everyone kind of has that buddy type person or that expectations, again, are very clear. Because I recently did a cruise with some friends and one had never cruised before and I could already tell like a couple of my friends are super particular about stuff. The others are really loosey-goosey. One announced the day we get on the ship, by the way, I don't really want to do anything active. And we had planned like snorkeling, hiking, all this stuff. And we're like, we don't know what you're going to do. And so, you know, just kind of figuring out. Yeah.
I'll get the buffet.
And it turned out that she was totally fine with that. She was like, I'm just going to stay on the ship. Wow. You guys go do what you want to do. And so that ended up being good. But sometimes it's not, you know, and so you have to make sure kind of everyone has their person that's going to be kind of, you know, their buddy, I guess.
There is sort of that persona that comes out, either the, okay, we're here. We have to see everything, because we don't know when we're going to be here again. Or I'd actually like to wander in this museum for a while and look at this painting rather than just know that I caught it in my periphery.
Yeah. And I'm the type of person that, especially on vacations, like I want everyone to have a good time. So I'm like micromanaging and I'm like, you know, exhausted by the end of it because I'm like, did you get to do what you wanted to do? Did you do? And I'm like herding cats and everyone's like, you know, what time are we meeting? And then I get like resentful of it. And so that's not good either. What about, let's talk a little bit about when you are bona fide, like traveling alone. So, you know, I do that a lot for work and I've actually learned to kind of enjoy it in the sense of I will bring like books that I've wanted to catch up on. I will. Mm-hmm. I always, especially if I know I'm going to stay in like a nicer hotel, I always bring like a swimsuit and just go sit in the hot tub. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't care who. I mean, there are strangers in there, and I just may or may not talk to them. But yeah, I kind of like treat it like my own little. Okay, I've done my meetings today. I've done my whatever. I'm not going to talk to anyone. So that's a one thing I like to do.
For me, I just really discovered packing light. Like, you don't realize how light you can pack. I know it doesn't seem like an exciting thing, but when you're not having to, like, put three bags on top of a train or behind something or try and carry it through real quick, that it's okay to pack light. Because, like you said, nobody's going to ever see you in a swimsuit again, well, nobody's going to ever see that I wore that shirt three times, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they don't care. And so to me, packing light helps me to feel like I can explore more. I mean, you know, I've had times where I was, you know, a layover for 8 hours somewhere. And if I had a ton of bags, even with me carrying between stuff, you're not going to want to go out and explore or maybe take a jaunt out or side or anything. But, you know, if you have something light, just go for it. And it gives more flexibility, I feel like.
Yeah, I find when I travel by myself, and like you, Lisa, I do a lot for, you know, for work, and I find myself actually the most reflective actually during those times. Mm-hmm. When you're on those long flights, oftentimes for me, I'm flying back to New York or D.C., and I just find myself thinking a lot when I'm on those flights. Mm-hmm. And this is going to sound weird, but I also, in those moments, because I do like to travel so much, I find myself thinking of like how blessed I am to be able to travel as much as I do. And then you've heard, of course, when you're on planes sometimes, like they say people cry on planes more. Like I watched Crazy Rich Asians not too long ago on the plane. It was at night and I was like, oh, I hope nobody can see the end here.
It's an allergy. I swear it's an allergy.
It's in my eye. Uh-huh.
You were just overcome by Mahjong, apparently. Yeah. So that's
okay. You do have to know yourself, though. Yeah. I mean, there's value for downtime. I'm an introvert as well, so I schedule my downtime. Mm-hmm. But if too much downtime isn't always good. Mm-hmm. And being aware of where you're headed, how long you're going to be gone. Oftentimes, as a guy, with all the junk that's on the TVs in the hotel rooms, unplug it.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of, it's kind of like with food. I say, okay, I want to find places where that I can't eat at home. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that there's television everywhere, so I'm not going to do that while I'm on vacation. I didn't pay this money to watch Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, that's actually one of the things I enjoy too about traveling alone is you can choose where you want to eat all by yourself. You know, you don't have to do the debate or, you know, anything. You're like, you know what? If I just want to stop by the store and get, you know, some cheese, a bottle of wine and, you know, crackers, then I can do that, you know. Or if you just want to, you know, go to a fancy little restaurant by yourself, sometimes it's kind of nice, you know, to be able to do that.
Yeah. You know, you're not left with the lowest common denominator, which is McDonald's.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Are you all okay with like going somewhere and eating by yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Like I think a lot of people are weirded out by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it depends on, I'm actually a pretty picky eater. Uh-huh. So, you know, it depends on where I am. I have one story where I was with some folks and I was in Fiji and a buddy of mine had decided that, well, I'm going to try this barracuda. Mm-hmm. And so he had the barracuda and then he washed it down with this chocolate milkshake. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to fly then to Australia. He spent the 4-hour flight from Fiji to Australia in the restroom. And so making wise choices about what you eat.
Wise choices.
It's important.
Speaking of that, maybe Tiffany and I can speak to this. Yeah. We get a lot of questions too at Boundless about single women traveling alone and safety and stuff like that. And I'm probably like the worst person to give advice because I'm the one that just randomly like goes places and people are like, seriously? Like I was walking around, I was in New York one night. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go down to Chinatown. And I just got on the subway and jumped off at some stop. And it was not as well lit as I had assumed all parts of New York would be. It was certainly was no Times Square. And then all of a sudden you hear like sirens and you had all the street vendors who were selling like knockoff crazy whatever stuff. And they swoop up all their sheets of stuff and run into back alleys stuff. And, you know, people are trying to sell you stuff and trying to cut a deal and whatever. And I was like, yeah, maybe, you know, I probably should have brought someone with me on this. But
Yeah, I kind of had an instance like that, but it was quite different. It was an actual wood jungle type thing. And I was in Germany and I decided to get my downtime. I was like, I am just going to go and walk in these woods. You know, I'm just going to go back in there and I'm going to get a trail and go for it. And I realized,
it's like the plot for a movie.
Too. Yeah, I know.
Like starting puzzling
gravel. Yeah. You know, I was like, okay, first of all, by the way, Google Translate does not do trail signs very well. So just saying that. And then I realized these trail signs had these freaky like boar on it that looked like it was attacking something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think I'm in the wisest spot, but I didn't know which way to get out because I had gone in far enough. I mean, I knew the general direction of which way I should go. But then I thought this was actually pretty stupid. You know, I don't know if there are wild boars. I don't know if there's crazy bums in these woods here. I don't know anything really. And it was the middle of the winter too. I really don't know the terrain. And so, yeah, traveling by myself like here, I don't mind going out. But I just didn't think about it. And it was a little scary. So,
yeah, I think sometimes, you know, obviously using like reputable transportation and stuff is good. Like I'm someone who will just take taxis or I've Ubered even in different countries and stuff and have felt pretty safe doing that. But yeah, I always try to it's not if you're a single woman and you're traveling alone is probably not the time to just like book maybe random VRBOs by yourself and be like working with individual, like, you know, non-company type situations.
I've even had a bad time with that in, actually, when I was Lisbon. Like, it was a taxi, I thought, but it wasn't a taxi. And the guy actually robbed me. Probably got about about 200 euros off of me, I think, and everything. I'm glad I didn't get my passport, but I was like, well, that was pretty stupid. So next time I went back, I made sure I had a couple people traveling with me, and I checked the taxi to make sure it was what it looked like it should be. So,
And I think a lot of, I mean, just for anyone, too, a lot of the same standard rules apply. I mean, you shouldn't, you know, walk down streets just looking at your phone, not being aware. I mean, anyone, you know, being aware of your surroundings, looking confident, you know.
Don't put your phone in your back pocket.
Stuff
like that.
Yeah, good points. So, well, there's so much more that we could talk about, but we're out of time. Oh, my goodness. Well, this will get us started. And of course, folks can hop over onto the blog at boundless.org for this show, which is 586. Just search 586 and you can comment on the show there. And thanks, you guys, for weighing in with your own experiences. I appreciate it.
Thanks. A lot of fun.
Appreciate it.
Well, for our culture segment, I was out of the office, and so I asked Catherine to step in and interview our great friend, Deborah Falada. She is the founder of True Love Dates and also has a book by the same name and just is a counselor, psychologist, has a lot of great expertise on relationships. And so she's going to be talking to Catherine about interdependence versus independence. Let's take a listen.
Deborah, I'm so excited to talk to you. Thank you for coming back to Boundless.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good. So you have this topic in your book, Choosing Marriage, which we've talked to you about before, but I think we need to come back to this one because we hear about it from listeners all the time. And the idea is, how do you learn to be independent while you're single and then kind of morph that independence as you're dating, engaged, married? And I realized recently that I think I'm really struggling with being too independent. Yeah. I'm about to get married and I was at an engagement party recently and they brought out this cake, this beautiful like chocolate cake with sprinkles. And they were like, hey, you guys should practice cutting the cake. So I was like, oh yeah, great idea. So my fiance Cody kind of steps up in front of me and he starts cutting it. And I like didn't like the way he was cutting it. I was like, no, too big of a piece. I'm not helping. So I was like, hey, let me step in the front and like I'll help you with this. So I step to the front. I'm like holding the little cake cutter and I start cutting it. And he's not really helping. He's kind of standing behind me. And I pull it out and I like drop this giant piece of cake on the table.
Oh, no.
And like everyone in the party was like,
So maybe cake cutting isn't your gifting.
Yeah, it was so awkward. And I sat there and I was like looking at the ruined cake and I was like, I think I need to learn to trust more and be less independent.
Yeah.
But it sounds like when you got married, you kind of struggle with being too independent too, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think when you're single, you are so trained to be independent in so many ways. And you assume that your way is the best because it's what's worked for you. You know, it's part of your personality or the way you grew up. So things that are part of your personality, such as for me, I'm such a go, go, go kind of person. You know, I'm type A, I'm efficient. I don't like to waste time. I love lists. And then my husband is the complete opposite of that. He is so laid back and he likes to have time for relaxation. And, you know, like we were such different people. In fact, when we did premarital counseling, I'll never forget, the counselor looked at us and he's like, Deborah, you're the gas, but John's the brakes.
But when you think, but we need both.
When you think about it, you need both. And I think that's the key when it comes to understanding independence versus what I call in Choosing Marriage interdependence, is understanding your strengths, understanding your weaknesses, and how the other person's life fits into those as well. And you really learn from each other along the way. So let me give you hope in that this isn't like something you learn overnight. You know, becoming interdependent is a process. It is a process of learning who's got strengths in what area and how can we become more like each other along the way.
Okay. Yeah. You talk about that there's actually a lie of independence that a lot of people believe. I thought it was funny because I was at Bible study recently and we went around the circle talking about our biggest struggles and everyone said they struggle with admitting that they need something. It was all women.
Yeah.
Why is that so hard for us? Why is it so hard to admit that we need help?
You know, I think as women, we see it as weakness to need something. And I think culture tells us it is weakness to need something, to need emotional care, to need someone to give you a good pep talk, to need affirmation, to need help fixing something in the house. Like I got an email from a girl that was like, I just struggle asking for help as a single woman because I don't want to show that I need something. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. There's a humility that comes with understanding our weaknesses and our strengths and understanding, okay, I do have strength in this area, but I am not strong in every single area. And healthy people understand the need for community and God made us that way. So this is beyond a male-female thing. It's not like I'm this poor female that needs the help of a stronger male. That's not how we want to see relationships. We want to see relationships as God helps us to see community. We all have strengths as the body of Christ. And we need to help each other and learn from each other and strengthen each other. And if we can kind of start viewing ourselves through that perspective, I think it would be a lot easier to ask for help, you know? But like I said, culture makes it like, oh, you're so weak if you need help, rather than seeing it as this beautiful picture of all the different strengths that God has placed within the community of Christ.
Yeah, and you had to learn that with John a lot with spiritual gifts, right? Can you tell me about that?
You know, in Christian culture, a lot of times we are taught that men look a certain way and women look a certain way when it comes to spiritual giftings. And if you look at my husband and I, we're very different when it comes to spiritual giftings. I am the one that teaches and talks and travels. His spiritual giftings are in his patience, his kindness, his faith, his prayer life. And you can look at one or the other and think, well, he should be more like this or she should be more like this. But really what it came down to for us is understanding the strengths each one of us possesses. And in the beginning of our marriage, it was a little bit of a struggle for me because I was wired to believe that spiritual giftings look like this in a man and spiritual giftings look like this in a woman. But really, that was just my preconceived notions that I had come into, the things that were taught to me that weren't necessarily true. And so learning to recognize his giftings and learning to recognize my giftings and learning to see how God wanted to interweave those things together has been a process. And it's been such a beautiful process for each of us.
Good. How do you embrace who you are, though, your spiritual gifts, and then also appreciate who the other person is? Because, I mean, I've heard it compared to like when you get married, it's like two cultures colliding and you're like totally different and you don't really understand where the other person's coming from a lot. How do you kind of step back and be like, hey, where I come from is valid and my feelings are valid and my spiritual gifting is valid and this, what I'm hearing from God is probably valid, but you have this whole other perspective.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
Again, it's a process, but I really think, number one, knowing yourself. Some people don't know themselves at all. They couldn't tell you. If I said, list your top three personality traits, list your top three spiritual strengths, most people would be like, I haven't actually thought about that.
Hmm.
So first it starts with knowing who you are and how God has wired you in your personality, but in your spiritual life as well. And then knowing who this person is that you're marrying, this person that you're in a relationship with, this person that you're dating, understanding them, understanding the dynamic of how God has made them. Because if you don't understand it, you're not going to be able to appreciate it. You're not going to be able to learn how to blend together. I kind of see relationships like as two different colors. Let's say I'm red and my husband's blue. We're both going to remain red and blue when we become one. But when you put two colors together, it turns into a different color. It turns into a purple. And purple requires a little red and requires a little blue.
Hmm.
So there's that part of embracing who you are, but then not staying the same. I really believe that in the healthiest relationships, we don't stay the same. We grow. We sharpen each other. We learn from each other. We become like the other person. And I really believe that that's part of the process of becoming one. And I talk about how, you know, John was so laid back. I was so type A. I have learned that my personality was not the best personality to
have.
That's
so hard, though.
There's weaknesses in being
right.
A go, 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 go type. Like, I realized by marrying him, I had no room for rest in my life. I had no room to breathe. I was anxious because I didn't understand the personality that comes with peace. And he's learned from me and I've learned from him. And we've kind of created this new norm, this new color. And I really believe that's kind of the picture of what marriage should look like.
That's beautiful. But I feel like, I don't know what stage of your life you got married, but I feel like I was just starting to realize, like, you know, I like the way I am. And then I'm realizing that it's not great all the time and I need to work on it. Yeah.
It's a constant process of the Lord helping you embrace how he has made you, but at the same time showing you the things that aren't the way he has made you. Like,
right.
There's a lot of things in us that's actually the result of sin, not the result of our personality.
Mm.
And sometimes our personality leads us into sin. Someone who's really type A can struggle with worry, you know, constant worry, constant anxiety.
Yeah, perfectionism. Yeah.
That doesn't mean God made me that way. So it's like, how can I take this personality that God has given me and refine it? And through the process of relationships, it gets refined, not just through marriage. If you're out there and you're listening and you're single, God refines you through the body of Christ before he refines you through marriage. You know, think about those friendships and those people in your life that are different than you, your family members, your pastors, your roommates. God refines you in those relationships just as much as he does in the context of marriage. Mm. And that's an important thing to remember.
Yeah. And we're so thankful for that. Okay, let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum from that fierce independence to codependence.
Yeah.
And you kind of said you actually see this in more Christian relationships than non-Christian, right?
I do.
That's crazy to
me.
So what does codependence mean?
You know, I was at a Christian college recently, and this young girl came up to me, and she was just talking to me about what I had just talked about with dating. And one thing that she mentioned was, I cannot wait, she said, until I find the person who's going to complete me. Like, that is just my goal right now in my life.
But it sounds so romantic.
Doesn't it? It does sound romantic. But I'll tell you what, that mentality can really be damaging to relationships. And we think that this person is going to complete us. This person is going to add so much to our life. But we don't realize that that's not actually the goal of marriage. And when we go into marriage expecting someone else to make us feel good, to fill us up, then we spend the entirety of our lives relying on that person to do something that God never intended for them to do. Mm. Their job is not to fill us up. Their job is not to give us security or purpose or meaning. So many of those things we need to deal with on our own. And I always tell people the best relationships are when two people feel complete, not when two people go into a relationship feeling half full and desperately trying to use the other person to fill each other up. That's what codependency is birthed out of, a desperate need to feel full using somebody else.
Hmm.
But that's not what God meant for relationships. I think the ideal relationship is two people who are both full and overflowing into each other's lives. And And that's the beauty of a healthy relationship rooted in Christ, because Christ promises that all fullness is in him. He can fill us up to overflowing. And I think that's a really important imagery to keep in mind as we're pursuing healthy relationships.
Yeah. You tell a story in your book about a girl you counseled who got married, and you kind of say she wasn't emotionally, spiritually, psychologically in any way ready for marriage. And I think you pegged the fear of all of our listeners that someday we will enter a relationship and not be emotionally, spiritually, psychologically ready. And that's my theory why less people are getting married a lot of times in the Christian community, is we're so worried of that being us. So what are signs that that's us? What are signs that we are not emotionally, spiritually, psychologically ready, or that someone else maybe that we're interested in is not?
Well, let me just infuse some hope here. You're never going to be completely ready.
Whew,
in the fact
really
that you're never going to be perfect, right? You're always going to have work that needs to be done. But the problem is so many people haven't even started the work. They go into marriage assuming the work's going to happen later. But we need to stop seeing singleness as just a time of waiting. Singleness isn't just a time to sit around, twiddle our thumbs, waiting for the next thing. That's how we present it a lot of times in Christian culture. It's just a time of waiting. I'm in a season of waiting. No, you're not. You are in a season of living. You're in a season of preparation. You're in a season of becoming healthy and whole along the way. And so what is God doing in your life right now? Are you even asking those questions? Have you dealt with your past and your past baggage and your family of origin and your identity and who you believe you are? Do you know what God's calling is on your life? Do you have a vision for where God is taking you, whether or not there's somebody there walking by your side? Do you have a vision for your future? Dealing with our past, understanding our identity today, and having a vision for our future are some steps that we can take to becoming a healthy person, because this time of singleness isn't just a time to sit around and wait. It's a time of preparation, and maybe not preparation for marriage, because let's be realistic. Not every single person on the face of this earth will get married. Statistically, the majority of singles will get married. But we can't see it as a time of preparation for marriage, because that's not guaranteed. But it's a time of preparation for whatever God has called us into next. And preparing and becoming healthy is never going to be in vain.
And I think that gives you hope when you think of it as preparing instead of just a drudgery of life.
I think so, too.
Hey, this is preparing me for something, even if you have no idea what it is.
Whatever it is, it's something good, because God is orchestrating. He is preparing you for something. And there's something really empowering about that.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to ask you, because one thing I love about your book is that you make your husband just sound like this amazing guy, and it's just like so inspiring.
Is it true? I think in my first book, I make him seem amazing. I think in the second book, I'm like, okay, let me give you a little more of a picture of who we really are.
Well, he's listening, so I guess you like still have to be careful. But one thing is you talk about your triangle theory, which I want to come to a little bit later, but you say you are sure of one thing, that your husband loves someone more than he loves you, that he loves God more than he loves you.
Yeah.
So did you see that when you were dating? Did you notice something in him that was different? Or is that something that maybe he's developed or you've appreciated more than now that you're married? Because I just hear the chorus of single women reading that and they're like, where is my John?
I know. Where is that godly Christian man who
loves
the
Jesus
Lord
more than me? Right.
But you know what? I think it's a lie from the enemy that those men don't exist. I hear it too. I hear it too. Working in the ministry of singles at truelovedates.com, I hear it all the time. But I'm having a hard time believing it, because I travel from town to town to town, speaking at churches and conferences and colleges. I meet so many people who love Jesus. And I believe that sometimes we look around and it looks discouraging. I think the enemy wants us to feel discouraged. He wants us to think, you're the only one out here that loves Jesus. You might as well settle. You might as well date that guy. Who cares if he doesn't love the Lord? Forget it. You're not going to really find someone who loves God. I really believe that the enemy is trying to like put this smoke screen and make us believe that we don't all exist. We're not all here. We're in this dark room. And maybe there's singles all over this dark room that love Jesus. We just can't see them. So go ahead and believe they don't exist. Because when you believe they don't exist, you will start making poor choices. And that's when you start living out of your desperation. So I'm going to go ahead and say, I am calling that out to be a lie. And I really believe that we trust God in this process. I can't control what this guy is going to be like or act like, but I can control who I am and how I'm growing towards Jesus. And I can continue to trust that as I walk towards him, He's going to help me meet somebody that is also walking towards him. So throw down that lie and continue trusting the Lord. And I also say, get involved in things that you love, get involved in churches. A lot of singles are saying that, but let's be honest. We are not very proactive with our love life. When it comes to getting a job, we put out resumes and we are doing the hard work of trying to apply to schools and trying to apply here and there. When it comes to dating, we kind of take a passive approach.
Yeah, we're like,
God's
going to
bring
app.
Me the right yeah. guy when the right timing comes.
Right.
But that's not how dating works. And dating is more important. You know, your love life, your future marriage is more important than so many other aspects of life. So put as much work into it. Take responsibility over it. Put yourself in places. Meet Christian singles. Get involved in community. If you live in a town that doesn't have something, you start it yourself. Like, don't wait around. Live, prepare, you know, take responsibility and move towards the direction of healthy relationships. And just like anything else, you put in the work that you can and you trust God with what you can't do.
Yeah, that's powerful. Going back to what you were saying about how, you know, so many women just have this idea that there are no good guys. I think it also makes when you get into the relationship with the good guy, or this has been my experience, you feel kind of bad and you feel guilty for your single friends because you're like, I want you to find this, but you're not finding it. And I've had friends tell me, because I, for a long time, I didn't post anything about my relationship. You know, I was so excited. I got engaged. I didn't post much about it at all until I was having dinner with a friend. And she was like, Catherine, I keep going back and looking at the picture you posted when you got engaged. And it was like the only picture I'd posted. And I was like, oh, really, really sorry. And she was like, no, it gives me hope.
Yeah.
Like you found. Yeah. And so now, I mean, in a nice way, I'm trying to not brag.
No, totally.
But like, hey, I found this guy. And so I think if you're listening.
Because wasn't there a time in your life that you thought they don't exist?
Oh, absolutely.
And today, here you are moving towards marriage.
Right.
And so thank God you didn't believe that lie, you know?
Well, I almost did. And so, but anyway, I just think if you're listening and you finally found a good guy, don't be afraid to talk about it because it's not, I mean, and people are responsible for their response to
their
your relationship.
Response,
but anyway,
yeah.
I think it gives some hope. Okay, let's end by talking about this triangle theory. And you and John had to learn this in your marriage kind of the hard way, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Just because you date and marry someone who loves Jesus doesn't mean that you're going to consistently love Jesus. It's definitely a trajectory. It shows you kind of where this person is heading. But we're all going to face hardships. We're all going to face dark times. And choosing marriage, I talk about a time where we really struggled. I mean, he was in residency working like over 100 hours a week. I was at home with two babies and trying to write my first book and navigating this ministry. So
did you have postpartum depression at the same time too?
Yes. And dealing with postpartum depression. So just think about the amount of stress. And when you're depressed, like you can't see 10 feet in front of you. It's like, what's the next step? Like you just struggling so much. And maybe sometime we'll talk about depression because that's a really important topic. But I'm under stress. He's under stress. We're not connecting with each other and we're not connecting with God because you know what? Sometimes stress causes you to do one of two things. For some people, it pushes them towards Jesus. For others, it's like, I'm putting him on the back burner for now. And during that season of our life, I think we were both putting him on the back burner, you know. And sometimes as a Christian, you forget that going to Jesus is a daily thing. I need to be daily filled. He's not going to just fill me once and for all. It's a daily process of getting filled and sitting under his living waters every single day. So we're going through this hard season that just comes to a head eventually. And, you know, I just will never forget this night of tears and crying and confessing and just realizing like we need a reset. And that reset starts with each one of us fixing our compass back to Jesus. And when you do that, so many other things need to change too, and how you're doing so many other things in your life. And so it was like one thing after another that we would talk through that needed to change. And I talk about the triangle theory because if you imagine a triangle and God is at the top of that triangle and each one of you is at the base, whether you're married or whether you're not married and you're thinking of this future person that you hope to marry that you don't even know, the closer you move towards the top of that triangle, which is God, and the closer the other person, your spouse or your future spouse, moves towards God, in a triangle, the closer you move towards the top, the distance between you decreases and you become closer to one another as well.
Wow.
And I really think that applies to dating. But it also applies to marriage. It applies to every stage of our life.
Well, friendships too,
friendships,
I think.
Yeah. Every relationship,
yeah.
You know?
That's awesome.
Jesus holds you together in so many ways.
That's awesome. Deborah, thank you so much. I feel like so many people who talk about marriage either make it look too easy or just like so hard that I'm like, I'm so stressed. But I think you have that perfect balance of like, hey, you know, here's realistically what happens and what you need to know. And I think you've given us all something that we can work on today.
Thank you so much. And I just want everyone to remember, the more you know, the better you're going to do. So all the stuff that you're learning and downloading, all these resources are just helping you become better so that you can do relationships better as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's good. They should listen to Boundless more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, I really enjoyed listening to that, and I hope you did too. And it's just a great reminder of how, you know, it's easy when you're single to just be independent and all about, like, I can conquer this myself. But certainly in dating and moving towards marriage, we need to stress interdependence. And even as single people, I think we need to learn to rely on one another a little bit more, because it's not just about marriage. It's just about being a Christian and relating to others. So that book, Deborah's book, Choosing Marriage, Why It Has to Start with We Is Greater Than Me, is available from Boundless this week. In fact, for a gift of any amount, we want to make this book available to you. And so go to boundless.org and you will see the book listed there. Just click on it, give a gift, a donation to Boundless, and we will get this book in your hands. And hopefully it will be helpful to you. Oh, it's just you and me. It's only you and me. All right. Well, we are going to finish up the show and open up our inbox. And Joshua Rogers is back here to answer this week's question. Joshua, great to have you.
Hey, good to be here.
All right. We tend to have you answer questions from the guys in our audience. And so this week is no exception. So this one's a little bit lengthy. So let me read it and have you weigh in. Our listener says, I'm a grad student in my third year of grad school. In the last year, a woman started her graduate education at the same school as me. We started running together and training for races. Outside of our runs that occur about three times a week, we spend little time together or even in groups and don't really communicate that much. So I don't perceive that there's much interest on her side. While I enjoy spending the time with her, I do not feel like I'm interested in pursuing anything deeper. Still, I care for her in a brotherly way and have on occasion given her advice on various problems with grad school and brought over broth and meals when she was sick. So my question is, in trying to avoid the dreaded friendlationship for either of us, should I initiate a conversation about where I stand with our relationship, or would that be presumptive and make things needlessly awkward? I want to be able to maintain this friendship that we have, and I enjoy being able to care for her in the ways that I have, but I don't want to lead her on and have her think I'm interested when I'm not. Oof.
Mm. I want to just start by saying that I do want to be encouraging. I understand that a lot of times these things can be complicated and difficult to discern, and this is not one of those times, though. To the guy out there, I realize this stuff happens. You know, your goal is to do the right thing, so I'm going to assume that's what's going on. But what also appears to be going on is that you have just a really remarkably narrow vision of, like, what it looks like to be in a friend relationship, because you're so far into this. So the thing that doesn't make sense to me is, like, you say, I'm not interested in pursuing her, okay? So you're like, we're just running three times a week. I assume it's not 20 minutes long, okay? And then you give her brotherly advice. So apparently she's asking for it. And then you bring her broth and nails. I'm not trying to be like harsh or anything, but if you really think that you can go running 3 times a week, give brotherly advice and take her broth and meals, this does not appear to be some like intense level of attraction. I mean, I don't know what to say. Because it seems like what you're saying is, look, I just want to sit down and I want to have a talk with her so that I can explain that I'd like to continue doing all these like very like emotionally engaging things with her, but I want to do that and let's just still act like we're friends. Listen, I'm sorry, but like people can say what they want. You know, there are people out there like, no, men and women can be friends. Okay, you can't. One of you is interested. It appears to not be you. Then she is. And so what I would say is you know better. And you know what you need to do. What you need to do is you need to stop and you think, what if I were interested in a woman and she's running with me 3 times a week and she's bringing me broth and meals? I mean, what would you think if all of a sudden she sat down and she's like, hey, Bobby, listen, I want to let you know I'm not into you. Do you mind if I keep bringing you broth and meal? I mean, it's just like, no, 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 no. Okay, so listen. I'm just going to quote some scripture. Do unto others as you have them to do unto you, because this, I just can't imagine you would want this.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's, again, not hearing her side of this and trying to speak objectively into this. It's tricky because I think, like, maybe she needs to have other people in her life that would provide some of those things. Like the running is one thing, but again, it seems like they're kind of connecting in weird ways on different levels, in some, you know, around some situations that are pretty unusual. And so again, we don't know who their other friends are and to what extent are they involved in their life. Does this guy hang out and run with some of his guy friends as well? Or what? It reminds me of what Mott Brown, who used to work for Boundless, said when he met his wife. They were kind of running a lot. And finally, he had a guy come up to him, an older gentleman, and just confront him and say, dude, you know, you need to fish or cut bait. You need to be very clear what this is about and just not spend the amount of time you're spending with her. Because again, things can change, feelings can change, and you don't want to be the one that's creating the lack of clarity in this. So, yeah, I think, I mean, hopefully this will give this guy just the chance to be like, okay, what is this about? How can I kind of assess my own heart and maybe be a little bit forward thinking and what hers can be saying. And I would say, regardless of where people's feelings are right now, just the amount of time and the way in which that time is spent is a little cause for concern. And so he might want to ask questions and be just quite frankly honest. And it should be easy to do, because if he thinks that she's not interested, then yeah, dude, just put it on the table, get that clarity that you need and act accordingly. So all right, folks. Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we do want to hear from you, and we would love to get some new inbox questions in the hopper. So do write to us at boundless.org with your question that we can answer on a future show. Of course, we have all of our past questions archived on our site at boundless.org. And so, yeah, we would love to hear you weigh in with any thoughts you have on that. Make sure you also hop over to boundless.org and jump on the blog so that you can comment on this show. Just search for 586. That's this week's show. And you can weigh in on what you would say to this young gentleman as well. So that is it for this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.